Hello and welcome to Witness Rugby Chat episode 22 of 2025, and we come to you following Widnes's game against Doncaster. It's me, James Gordon. I'm joined, as ever, by Mike Parsons. I'm perhaps somewhat fortunately, I was otherwise engaged on Sunday, Mike. So if you want to, I'm sure we'll talk about quite a few things from the game, but if you want to get things started, where do you want to start?
Might as well go straight into it, aren't we? I mean, you was definitely the winner of the afternoon because nobody in the stadium was wearing a Witness Witness merchandise, so that's for sure. First of all, I'd like to say, you know, I think both of us wishing Jake Mason the best. I mean, it was an horrific accident, really. I haven't had the beauty of looking back at the incident, but at the time, I didn't. There was a lot of people shouting for blood, really, and I didn't see a lot in the challenge. And I know you've had a look at it since, James, and it seems to be just an unfortunate situation. And all the best to Jake in his recovery.
Well, obviously, I was commentating at Castleford, and I'd obviously seen the update, and I'd seen that there was a stoppage, and my sister was at the game. She was texting me. And I'd seen a cut. I was surprised no one actually shared the tackle because the game was being streamed. So I was waiting for someone to share it. And I'd seen a few comments, and then I'd seen a few probably Doncaster ones saying there wasn't much in it. And then I saw some people getting a bit irate, and I've seen people getting irate afterwards. And so naturally the first thing that I could do on Monday was try and have a look at it. And like I said, I don't think there was much in it. I mean, I'm interested he's got a two-match ban. Which is interesting because, well, for one, because Matagi wasn't charged with anything, I don't think, or he must have got sending off sufficient. And what he did was far worse than what Gebby did to Mays. And it was a sort of thing that I think probably happens. You know, you probably see it once every few matches. There was no malice in it. There was no massive contact. It was just an unfortunate. It was just an unfortunate incident. I thought it's a penalty. It was a penalty.
Being at the stadium as well, mate. I mean, when the referee come back on the field and let everybody come on, both medical teams obviously fantastic. And, you know, it was really comforting to see how the situation was handled. But the crowd really got on the back of the referee, and personally, I did feel a little bit sorry for Edin Gebby because nobody enters the field of play to do that on purpose. And it definitely, in my opinion, wasn't intentional. And I think he got a red card because of the crowd pressure more than anything.
Yeah, well, as I said, Gebby and Mason were teammates at Whitehaven last season. And both being overseas players, you would expect that they probably spent quite a bit of time together. I'm not saying that former teammates can't have beef or might not foul each other, but it's unlikely that a malicious, you know, something that malicious would happen between two former teammates. I feel like the ban is very much an RFL trying to appear to be doing the right thing because of this ongoing litigation that's going on, in my opinion, because it's been a big. It's a fairly big headline, isn't it? Game suspended for an hour because of an injury. If the player hadn't been banned, I think maybe from an outsider point of view, they might have been like, oh, well, why was it so bad? But I think when you actually look at it in the cold light of day, I just, like I say, I think it was a penalty, but I would say it probably wasn't.
It's a freak incident, mate. I've been going for a hell of a long time, and you've covered a lot of games, mate. And between us, I don't know if you can, but I certainly can't remember a player being suspended for that long for a situation like that.
Yeah, and it's hard for the referee because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I assume he didn't watch it. He only gets to see it once. He's got to make a decision, I suppose. If you've seen a tackle where a player's been off, you know, where a play's been stopped for an hour, you probably naturally think, you know, it must have been a bad one. And then maybe that's influenced him as well. As I said before, the Matagi one was a clear direct shoulder to the head on Liam Bent. And then There was obviously a bit of afters. And I was amazed that he wasn't, I was amazed that he wasn't on the list of charges, because that was worse than the, that was worse than the Gebbi one.
Yeah, and do you know what, mate? At the first half, after the incident and the emotion in the stands, and look, the crowd really got behind the team. You know, we'll go into it a little bit further later about the actual game itself for what we've seen. One thing that can't be questioned is how the fans got behind the lads, because they really did. But it was a strange atmosphere, and that first half, once that incident had happened, right up until half-time then, it was a very bitty dog's dinner of a game, because you had players flying out the line. I even said at one point, I felt sorry for the referee, because the Mataggi incident happened then, and their witness made a high tackle, and the Doncaster players were staying on the floor saying it was the same thing. It was just a complete mess, and really broke the rhythm up of that first half completely. It was... Yeah, it was a very, very strange game, that's for sure. And certainly once I wouldn't have liked to have refereed it, put it that way.
What was it like during the stoppage? So the game stops. It was stopped for about an hour, wasn't it, I think, where you're sat in the stand. I guess, it wasn't a nice day on Sunday either. I mean, it was pretty poor in Yorkshire. I guess it was much better here. You sat in the stand wondering what's going on. What were people like in and around? Because I was wondering whether people would be getting impatient, because, you know, you don't mind a stoppage for 10, 15 minutes, but when you've been sat there for an hour, surely people are starting to think, well, what's going on?
I think the first 5 or 10 minutes was quite normal. You obviously see a player on a stretcher, both medical teams going over, and you kind of know what's going on, where they're taking precaution. But as time went on, you could see Jake Mason's partner come down from the stands. You know, Alan Coleman walked on the pitch, and I think it was a bit more of a, I wouldn't say people got impatient, it was a bit more of a nervous anxiety, because once you get to like the 15 minute mark, you're thinking this ain't normal. This has the potential to be something horrendous that you really don't want to see. You know, certainly, well, everybody, the players, the coaching staff, his family, people close to him. I think where the confusion come in was once he left the field, obviously everybody in the stadium stood on the feet, round of applause, rightly so. But then the referee blew his whistle and just run straight down the tunnel. So you're sat there as a spectator going, where's the referee gone? And the players are looking bemused. So obviously what had happened was they phoned an ambulance, because you could see Liam Clark was on the phone on the pitch. But obviously, I'm assuming the ambulance hadn't arrived, and the medical team needed to stay with, obviously, Jake. And obviously, there was no doctors present around the field for if any more incidents happened. We got a couple of updates by Sean Mellor over the tannoid, saying there'd be an update of if the game was going to continue. But it was a very, very strange experience. I wouldn't say people got impatient. It was more of a concern, as you're going, as time's going on, you're thinking, what on earth's going on? You know, really hoping the lad's okay. Very, very strange, mate. Very strange. And I really hope I don't have to go a rugby league game in the same kind of situation ever again, to be honest, because it had a very strange feeling to the atmosphere, something not very nice.
Yeah, well, the updates were generally positive afterwards. Regardless of if there's any long-standing issues with Mason, he wouldn't be able to play against Bradford this week anyway. So it'll be a case of wait and see whether he's back for the Sheffield game, or if it is a serious injury that he suffered. That aside, the result was effectively a disaster for Widnes. It was a big game in terms of the keeping up with the playoff teams, because Doncaster are just as much out of the picture as Widnes are, really. Doncaster needed a win to keep up with it. Widnes needed a win to keep up with it. And crucially, now it means that there's a bit of a gap opened up between Doncaster and Widnes in the lower, the bottom half of the table, if you like. I turned on the radio to listen. I think Widnes were winning 16-14. I think they just scored to go 16-14 up. And playing against 11 men, you're thinking at that point that they'd be home and dry, but then somehow managed to contrive to lose the game.
Crazy, mate. Crazy game. You know, 20 minutes, we started relatively okay, but Doncaster, every time they got an attack, you could tell early doors. When Doncaster were in our half, sometimes you have a gut feeling as a supporter and you just didn't feel comfortable when defending your line. And obviously, they went ahead and then the stoppage happened. And look, I don't want to say, I want to be careful what I say here and it's taken in the right way, but the two red cards was almost a lifeline for Widnes. You're thinking, well, if this game had gone on 13 versus 13, the way it was and the way we defended, you're thinking we could have got away with one a little bit here in terms of the actual game itself. And the really worrying sign, James, for me, was 13 on 11, 13 on 12, because Nick Gregson in the Matagi incident got 10 minutes as well. So, what, 50 minutes, you know, 10 minutes of it, you're playing with one player more and, you know, two more for the rest of the game. We just didn't look like we was going to break Doncaster down. We put one or two plays on, playing to point on the field, and we scored with relative ease just by putting the ball where you should do and finding the gaps, picking the right pass. And I've got to be honest. Look, I don't think Matthew Fozard had his best afternoon, but when he's not on the pitch, we look so methodical and slow at the play of the ball. Our attack looks so poor, and it has been all season. You've got to look at Depp Patton and Will Roberts. Will Roberts less so because it was only his second game and it was a fresh halfback partner again. But the pivots, Jordan Johnson, you know, Nick Gregson when he was on the field, what we had to do was play to points on the field and the gaps had opened themselves. But everything was so lateral. Joe Edge, when he went to fullback, there was no potency and with his run. It was going a bit too wide and we were just going from side to side. And credit to Doncaster, they worked it out and they was just sliding and happy for us to make 20, 30 metres at a time. But you were never confident we was going to execute. And yeah, it was very concerning for me. And let's have it right, James. Like, I don't want to be too harsh, but I think you've got to, because let's have it right. No matter who's been playing at halfback, no matter who's been playing at fullback this year, the attack has just not been there at all. And against 11 players, it wasn't again.
Well, and I've seen some stuff on Twitter about this. I find it hard to believe that a team with Adam Lawton in, you can't just pass in the ball when you're playing against 11 and he'll find some space. I just don't believe that can't happen. I was a bit surprised with the team selection. I mean, it sort of worked out in the end because Mason got injured, but I was surprised that Bennion was 18th man and they decided to put Fleming on the bench. Now, whether that was partly because of maybe worries about injuries for Patton or Roberts or whatever, but given the size of Doncaster's pack and thinking about how Doncaster have played against Widnes the last few times they played him, I was surprised that Widnes didn't decide to muscle up a bit more with Bennion on the bench.
I'd have definitely have had him in the team before kickoff. I mean, as it transpired, it was quite a handy substitution to have, with obviously Flem dropping into centre and then Joey Edge going to fullback. But in terms of preparing and planning for a game, absolutely. We know the Doncaster pack has South Sea Islanders in it, and you know, the large, and like say Liam Bent isn't the biggest forward. We've got Dan Murray. Max Roberts not the biggest forward. You know, obviously your two back rowers, fine, fair enough. But You feel sorry for them. I mean, Condon got put on a one-on-one try once and went through and scored with ease. But yeah, like in terms of going toe-to-toe, we ain't the biggest in the prop departments. And I think if I was picking the team, and I'm no coach and I'm not claiming, you know, that I'd be a decent coach, but I think Gav Bennion on the face of things would have been in my 17, put it that way.
So the defeat was a disaster. It would have been a disaster 13-13, to be perfectly honest, but losing 13-11 is an even bigger disaster. Witness now 5 points off the playoffs, albeit they have got a game in hand on Halifax, Barrow and Featherstone. I think what concerns me a little bit is Widnes have only won 6 games this season out of 16, whereas, you know, even Doncaster have won 9. You know, Halifax, Barrow, Featherstone and Doncaster have all won 9 games. Widnes have only won 6. I mean, if you take away the 2 wins against Toulouse, Widnes have really struggled against everybody else, really. The 2 draws, I suppose if you count the 2 draws, they've got 7 wins. But it's hard to come up with some positives. I've been banging the drum about the run in Bradford this week, the toughest game on paper that Widnes have got left. But as people have pointed out, that Widnes' own form was that bad, only 2 wins all season, that even though they have got to play London, Batley and Hunslet at home, well, lost to Batley away anyway, and the London and Hunslet games away from home were very close. It just looks like a miserable situation at the moment.
It is, and look, I know we've had conversations in the past on this podcast of winning isn't everything. There's a lot of things you can do as a club to build and get better and be better, and we've been through it tenfold. However, the home form this year has been criminal.
Well,
it makes it such a hard sell for. You know, to retain people you're doing good work, getting new people to the game, X, Y, and Z. And then they watch performances like we've put in this year. And it makes it a difficult sell for them to return. One of them wins come early doors against Sheffield, and it was 10-8, and the weather was horrendous. And it was,
it wasn't pretty.
If you're a new fan going to experience it, unless you went the Toulouse game this year, you'd be questioning, do we want to come back and pay full price next time or X, Y, and Z?
Well, I mean, especially because the price is ridiculous as well. They've won 2 out of 10, I think, or 2 out of 11 if you include the Challenge Cup match. Going back to last season, I think it's 2 out of 8 this season. And like you say, it's a tough... And I think it is a little bit harsh on them, but at the end of the day, that's sport. You know, you sometimes don't get the results that sometimes you deserve, but, I mean, you might argue that the win against Sheffield was lucky. Sheffield were probably the better team.
The damaging ones was Featherstone. That was a 50-50 game at the time. Barrow, 50-50 game at the time. This week against Doncaster should have been a 50-50 game, and then performances in particular, they were so subpar, and they had the potential to be crackers. They really did. And just on the day, we've just not put it together.
What do you think about the attendances being announced, Mike? Because last year, we were told that the attendances that were being announced weren't the actual accurate attendances in terms of what was being submitted to IMG. So I think you probably have a better memory than me. I'm sure from memory, the average was about 1,900.
Yeah, that's right. Ballpark figure,
The official average. Whereas the crowd figures this season seem to have been, the announced figures have been fairly steady. I don't know what it was on Sunday, but they've been around 2,700, I think.
The north, mate, was open to the end. Not the northwest corner, but the other side was open to the end, and it did feel like there was more people in the stadium. Obviously, the deal went out to a Holtenhausen, didn't it?
Yeah. So, and that's what, I suppose that to me is like at the moment I'm a bit like, well, crowds aren't dropping off. In theory, I mean, like I say, I don't know whether they're still announcing not, well, I suppose you'd have to call it a false number. Like, if they're saying that last year's average was 1,900 and then they're pulling in 2,500-2,600 now, even though you've only won two of the last 10 at home, well, that's basically saying, well, we've got 500-600 new people coming, or it might be people coming back, but you're getting 500-600 more people in despite the form that they're in. But I don't know whether that I don't know whether that is genuinely the case or not.
No, I think it's your season ticket holders plus then everything else that's sold. For me, I think the RFL, again, should be saying to clubs, what you announce over a tannoy it should be how many is sat in the stadium. Simple as that. That's an attendance. Not people who are sat at home that bought a season ticket.
Well, I mean, my actual opinion on it is that I think season ticket holders should count if they don't go. Because
you've technically bought one for every game.
If you've bought a ticket, I think anyone who bought a ticket, whether they come or not, should count. Now, because in theory, right, if you sold out every single ticket, if you sold out every seat and then half the people didn't turn up, it's still a sellout, even though half the people have turned, because you couldn't have filled them over half seat. So I guess the issue is when clubs are giving out 1,000 free tickets, that if a club could give out 500 free season tickets and add 500 to the gate every week automatically. I mean, I have no idea how they possibly audit it. I don't know, because clubs.
It felt to me there's more people in the stadium this week. Well, I know you've put Hollenhausen have paid for discounted
tickets. Well, that's a positive.
It's massive positive,
that's a massive
mate.
Positive, yeah.
However, after the Bradford game, that deal stops, and you've got to look at these two performances. Obviously, we don't know how the Bradford game's got to go. Now, if you get a similar performance as what we did against Doncaster, you've got to look at it and think, well, how many of them people are going to want to return? That's where it comes in, and that's where, going back to my original point, the home form this year, it's been really disappointing. And whatever, you can do as many amazing initiatives as you possibly can, but you can't keep asking for goodwill off people. You've got to be putting in your home performances, and you've got to be making your home ground the fortress, and especially when you're on a mission for the playoffs. And ultimately, mate, we spoke in the past years and years ago about our away form being dodgy. Well, unfortunately, it's a bit of a kick in the teeth if we don't make the playoffs, and you have to say it's your home form that's troubled you rather than your away.
I suppose the other thing is as well, in Widnes probably more so than, I suppose all grounds have got the quirks, Batley should be better at home because of the slope. Bradford, I think, should probably be better at home than most because of the size of the pitch. And Widnes, in theory, because of the 3G pitch, should be an advantage. I suppose a lot of teams train on 3G now, but you'd have thought that if a team was going to get an advantage, Widnes have got, look at Halifax. Halifax are having to play home games at Bradford. And it's like, that's surely a disadvantage to them, but they're still picking up results.
Here's one for you, James. Since we've come down from the Super, obviously, like I say, the 3G pitch and making your home ground the fortress. Now, we're not athletes, but we're told quick pitch, obviously a wide pitch as well, a good design for expansive rugby. Now, in our time being in the Championship, for me, you should be recruiting a fast, quick team. Obviously, we brought in Jake Mason, and that's a start, and maybe we'll go towards that. But I don't think, we've not had a pacey backline since being in the Championship. And I just feel we're missing a trick there. It's almost like we don't suit our own pitch, if that makes sense.
I don't think we've seen much of Mason. I don't think Mason's done. He's not being bad, but I don't think we've seen any. I think he made a half break. Was it against Toulouse down the right hand side? But we haven't seen anything, and it's difficult for him coming in mid season, without pre season and it hitting the ground running. But I don't really remember much where you've seen his pace, or I felt watching him at Whitehaven, he was one of them, as soon as he got the ball, everyone was on the edge of the seat, or, well, not in the case in Whitehaven, but you know what I mean, they're on the edge of the seat expecting something to happen. I don't feel like we've seen that from him at Widnes yet, and like I say, there's reasons for that to a point. I think lack of a running half is a massive issue, I think, because that, having someone buzzing around, because ultimately, Fozzard, as an example, he's the perfect hooker to be able to bring a fast team into the play because he's quick around to play the ball. He would get involved and he would be part of that.
You can even go further and go into the forward part. We don't win many quick rucks, and if you're not winning quick rucks, then you're playing the ball slower. And like I said before, you know, when Foz ain't on the pitch, we look even slower. And for just a player you've got to be playing quick.
Well, we're just playing with back rowers. There's no props, and like I say, Liam Bent tackles everything, but he's not a prop. He can defend as a prop, and I'd probably have him at loose forward personally. But he's not going forward. He does his job as he would do in, you know, if you put Liam Bent in any position, he would do a job probably. But other than Dan Murray, there's no props that can go toe to toe with some of the other packs that you're playing against. Absolutely. And I think ultimately that's laying your platform for the others around.
Yep. Quick play the ball from your props equals quick rucks for the hooker, halfbacks running onto the ball, and everything else comes with it, you know, and that's when gaps start to appear, isn't it, really, in defensive lines.
And and like I say, I mean, you could pick holes in a lot of things, and, you know, but I just think that Liam Bent, as an example, he's having to do an absolute mountain of work, and he loves doing it, and that's fine, and he'll carry on doing it. But it's like there should be other people helping him take off some of the pressure of taking the ball forward. And you could take it back to the decision to get rid of Martin Riley and Liam Kirk. Maybe you raise that. I mean, I don't think Riley was particularly, he wasn't pulling up any trees anyway, to be perfectly honest. But you've not brought in really, Widnes haven't brought in props to replace them. Condon and McWhirter are probably both back rowers themselves anyway, from what I've seen of them. So, I don't know. It's a funny one at the moment, because I feel like you can pick holes in a few different things, and I guess people will have different opinions on what they think the issues are. I don't think it's a player quality issue. I don't think Widnes have got bad players. I actually think on paper it would, but I do think that props is a massive, I think they're just short of props. And we've seen it in the previous seasons. Yeah, we've seen it in the previous seasons, probably last season, and maybe the season before, were probably exceptions where they actually had enough front row power to get through and made the playoffs last year. But then this season, gone back to type what we've seen in the previous years, where they just not had the forwards. And then it's not like they've been blessed with, you know, like Luke Thomas as an example. That situation's probably the one that's killed. That's probably killed.
We have had Max Wood the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, Max, but you'd want both of them. You know what I mean? That Luke Thomas situation has probably killed that manoeuvre that I presume, you know, Alan Coleman's, well, they pretty much said that it was Alan Coleman's call, wasn't it, to do that. The Luke Thomas situation has killed that manoeuvre, because he's manoeuvred that situation to bring in Lawton. You know, he'd got McWhirter lined up. Obviously, Condon probably came a bit later. But because it was probably all based around having Luke Thomas, now that he's being pulled out of it, you just look short of a prop, whichever way you look at it.
I mean, it goes back to it, doesn't it? I mean, I've said it all year about the loan market and stuff. Never count on a loan, certainly not from Warrington. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I've seen Anna Coro signed for London.
It's like the 5-yard trick, isn't it, every time? But like, joking aside, there is an imbalance, and I just cast my mind back. Just certain things stick in your memory, and I look back to the Batley game, And I distinctively remember Alan saying he needed troops at that day. And it's just never got better since. Of course, we've recruited, but players have left also since. And it's just felt like you're chasing your tail. And I think I said on the last podcast or the one before that, when you're chasing yourself in a transfer market, it's very rare you catch up because injuries keep on happening. Championship, player departures keep on happening. Loan recalls keep on happening. And you leave yourself behind the eight ball. And I think if we're to look back on the season, probably one of the areas where it's gone wrong is we wasn't probably equipped correctly, you know, going into the season and we never recovered from it.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, Okoro has been recalled by Warrington from Castleford and they've sent him to London Broncos. Warrington are dual registered with basically a quarter of the championship because they're dual registered with Halifax and London as well as Widnes. But Okoro will play against Widnes for London. He's already played against Widnes for Swinton. He's played against Widnes for Bradford all during the time. Well, that's what I mean. And during the whole of that time, he probably would have got into Widnes' team virtually every week. But anyway, I'm loath to talk about the player situation. In more positive news, I got a score back on the predictions league this week because we did, even though we didn't record an episode, we did make some predictions and I successfully predicted that London would win and also that Toulouse would win. Yeah, and then you got one over me because I fancied Batley to beat Halifax, but Halifax turned them over. So you're still 3 points ahead, Mike, in the overall season score. Let's have a look at the games this week. There's a Friday night because, of course, Halifax are at Oddsall. They're playing York, who have won about 300 in a row now, I think. That might be a slight exaggeration.
300 in a row, and they're not going to slow down. Well, I've said even when they started really slowly, it was my tip to be the best in the competition, despite Toulouse and Bradford. Well, they beat Bradford three times now. So, yeah, sorry, Halifax, but got to go for York, really.
Yeah, they've won 12 in a row now, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, they've won 12 in a row, but they've won 16 of the last 17. So they're... And then making noise
there, right?
Well, that's what I mean. Now, I'm told that Super League, they're going to decide whether to go up to 14 or not, but whether it's 12 or 14, it will be decided by the IMG grading. And I would imagine that winning the Championship Grand Final is probably going to be what'll tip the edge for someone.
And if York do it, they've already got the 895 in the bag as well, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, so the 895 is it 0.1 or something, the 895 cup? But I suppose the call is whether if it goes 12 or 14, I think at 12, Salford are naturally the most vulnerable, but do I see a situation where Salford come out and York go in? I'm not too sure. It's still hard to call, but I think it might well come down to who wins the grand final. Toulouse, Bradford or York, whichever one of them three wins the grand final, might be the 12th team. I think some of the other clubs might have worries, you know, that I think Castleford and Huddersfield, I don't think they're plain sailing for them.
Huddersfield are a team. Like I said, going back to what we was kind of speaking about in the last podcast, we mentioned York, and obviously you had your reservations and stuff like that. But one thing we agreed on is they're doing it on the field and stuff. It's the crowd situation. Is that going to improve? But you look at Huddersfield and what they're serving up on field. Then you've got historically get no crowds. They've just got one great man, Ken Davey. But then next year, they're not going to even be playing in Huddersfield. And for me, like, there should have been things captured in IMG where you can't have teams playing in the top tier and not playing in the same town or city they're from. I'm sorry, but that should be punished, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, it's like the one where grounds were unavailable, isn't it? Like, you know, you can't play at our home. We can't play our home ground because we're not allowed to play there for 2 months in the summer because of football. You know, Oldham will be lapping up the points for Boundary Park, but then, well, when we just played him, it was at Sedgley Park.
And that should be punished as well, mate.
Yeah. There was an article this week that had a bit from Stuart Murphy, and he says that they're working on the IMG score. You know, he mentioned that in the interview that he did on this podcast as well. In my opinion, I think Widnes could probably get... I think the best Widnes can hope for is probably 17th. I think that's probably the ceiling for Widnes is to get to 17th. But I'm sure Barrow and Featherstone will have something to say about that, and Oldham, to be fair. But it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. But I still think Salford have got a chance of staying in.
I'd like to think not, James, but I understand where you're coming from, and you know you've got far more expertise on the grading system than what I have. But just going back to Widnes, you know, Stuart was saying, wasn't he, that he's quite confident of obviously our score going up. Let's get it right,
Mike. Sorry to interrupt you. The score that Widnes are trying to get back up to should have been at the score that they had anyway.
Absolutely, mate.
The failings, you know, whoever's to blame, the failings of last season meant that they dropped 6 places.
Yep.
And ultimately, not much had changed at Widnes in terms of, you know, the facilities are still the same, fan base is still the same. There was errors made that cost Widnes them 6 places. So, yeah, while they've done a bit of work to get that score back up, that basically, all that is just recovering from the blip of that last year. It's whether they can kick beyond that.
Well, that's it. That's the point that I was going to come to. I wasn't going to give praise for that because, like you say, that's where we should have been anyway, unless there's any extra points that we do get in them fair dues. But I think if you're Widnes, and from my perspective, I think we've just got to let it play out. Hopefully we get back to the grades we should have got originally. See how the land lies in terms of, A, what our division looks like, because we don't know what that's going to even entail yet. B, what the top flight looks like and who's been taken away. I think if Toulouse miss out, I have massive reservations of whether they're going to carry on over here. So as much as I want to be playing your Bradfords and your bigger teams in the Championship, if it does go to 14 and, say, Toulouse go hypothetically, that leaves you as a club, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, left in the Championship. And although you won't be playing sides with as big attendances, you've got to puff your chest out and take advantage of that and start implementing things and becoming a big dog in the division. And I think that's where we've got to then kick on for when the structure rechanges, which will probably be in 2-3, maybe even in a year's time, for us to take advantage. I think that's where we've got to go, is once we know where the land lies and what teams are getting out of our way, that's when we've got to start kicking on then. There's no getting the scores back or whatnot. It's progression, both on and off the field. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah. Going back to these predictions then, one of the other fancied Super League teams is Toulouse. They're away at Barrow. That was an undo, that.
Like I say, I have said they've been wobbling to lose. They've been wobbling, haven't they? They wobbled right in half when they scored in the last minute at home against Featherstone to win. Otherwise, they'd have been beaten, right?
Yeah, and I think Barrow gave Toulouse a push in France, and I think it stretched out in the end, but it was close for 60-65 minutes. I presume you're going for York for the first one. We forgot to say York to beat.
Yeah, it's York for me. Yeah.
I'll go Toulouse to beat Barrow.
Oh, what happens? Oh, I'm never back against Barrow at home.
I'm just looking right, and I can't see the last time Barrow actually beat Toulouse. So going back to 2016, when Toulouse and Barrow were in League One, Toulouse have beat them every single time, home and away. And so that's what swung me in Toulouse's favour.
I'm gonna go Toulouse, and the reason why I'm gonna go for them is in fairness, Featherstone are kicking on now, and I think they are an half decent side. So yeah, we'll go.
You're
with
basically
Toulouse.
Just gonna match all of my predictions a bit.
No,
like,
no, I'll go first.
Yeah, you've got this 3-point lead. And no, if you match my predictions, I can't claw it back. Doncaster Batley.
Doncaster for me. I backed them to probably get in the playoffs, mate. No.
Oh, you reckon that's a big call?
I said if Widnes don't, I think Doncaster will.
Are you saying Featherstone will make it? So you're saying Doncaster instead of Halifax?
Yeah.
And Barrow?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Featherstone, London?
Featherstone.
Yeah. Oldham, Hunslet. These are nice and easy, these ones.
Oldham?
Oldham, Hunslet. We'll go Oldham. And then, well, Widnes, Bradford. Some might say this is easy as well. I don't know what to think, to be honest, Mike. I'm a bit... I'm feeling it at the moment, it's fair to say.
Just stop there. Stop there a minute.
Oh, go on.
I'm going to change. I'm going to say Barrow are going to beat Toulouse.
Oh, dear. Right, he's having a late wobble.
T. Ritson in the corner, winning try. That's what I'm going for.
So, witness Bradford.
I'll go first with it, James, because you're behind and stuff. I was there on Sunday, and listen, I genuinely, in my gut instinct, that Toulouse game, I felt something, and there's something different on a Saturday night, and I genuinely did think we was going to win, and we did. But on this occasion, I just think it's too much of a big turnaround. You're not going to have Mason at fullback. So that's another change in the spine. And the atmosphere in the bridge fleet, it was very, very low. And I think, you know, the supporters was very low as well. I just think everything together against Bradford, where they've been beat by York 3 times, they need to be keeping in touch with Toulouse and York. And I do actually think Bradford are better on bigger pitches. I think they're actually restricting their odds also. Hopefully a spirited effort by Widnes, but I've got to go for Bradford. It kills me to say it.
Yeah, I mean, part of me just thinks there'll be some sort of response after last week, or there has to be some sort of response after last week. Widnes have got a decent record against Bradford, although we're definitely second best in the reverse fixture. I'll stick with Bradford as well, and hopefully we'll be proved wrong. Go. What have we got? Questions?
We've got just 2 questions this week. One was from the Bridge Suite, and the other, somebody messaged me, so here we go. Where do you think the problem lies, the board, the players, or the coach? I mean, it's quite a direct question to have to answer.
I think it's a tough question. I mean, none of us really know the ins and outs of everything. I think changing the coach would make a massive difference. I don't think so. I think if you look at what Widnes have been like over the last 7 or 8 years, changing the coach has been the one thing that they've always seemed to try and do, and it's clearly never worked because each coach left. Alan Coleman was the first coach since Super League to start 2 consecutive seasons. So I don't think changing the coach at the moment, and we've had this discussion on a few podcasts. I think Alan Coleman's got enough credit in the bank for last season, but I definitely think questions are having to be raised now about the squad situation, and I suppose ultimately the coach is responsible for that. I do think there's a lot of stuff that. I don't know what it is. It feels like witness are always waiting for something to happen. And I'm like, well, if you're not going to do it yourself, and if you're not going to push yourself, you know, if you're not going to bang the drum about yourself, then who is? Look at the director, the new director who's come in, and he's done the business club, and all of a sudden he's raised, I think they said they've raised 50, they've got 50 members, haven't they?
Yeah.
50 members is like 60 grand a year. So out of nowhere, a new director's come in, and don't get me wrong, you'll get drop-offs from that, but ultimately a new director's come in and raised 60 grand a year. Now, why haven't we seen initiative like that before?
Well, it puts questions over the commercial side of things, doesn't it? Because it's almost as if, well, someone's come in and had that enthusiasm to do it, and fair play to doing it. But like I say, that should, it's incremental income that somebody else could have had that initiative to do.
Well, that's the business. That's the business ultimately. It's a rugby league, you know, it's a professional rugby, well, semi-professional rugby league club. There's only so many ways you can make money, but you've got to get off your backside and do it. And I think I've seen people say, oh, well, the club have only got three staff. And I'm like, three staff? It's a semi-professional rugby league club. Actually, three staff isn't actually that bad compared to some of the operations that I've seen. So I think everyone could be a lot. I think everyone could be better. It all comes down to money at the end of the day. And I've seen people saying, oh, well, what's the point? What's the point in improving the IMG grade unless a money man comes in, we've got no chance of Super League? And it's like, well, if that's the case, if you're going to have that attitude, you might as well just shut the whole thing down. The club can only do the best that they can within the parameters they've got. And my challenge, my personal opinion, is I don't think the club have been doing the best of what they could do if it was ran better or if they had the right people. Andrew Orobin come in, that example is a prime example of someone with enthusiasm, someone with business contacts, someone who's out and about, who knows people, coming in and adding something that will have a bona fide impact on the bottom line. And I think there's other people around who could probably make a similar impact that, okay, yeah, I mean, I suppose anyone could put 25 grand in to a point, but as we discussed on the podcast, yeah, you can't get to a point where you've got 20 directors because it'll just become an absolute mess. Going back to the question, I just think people are always keen to have a pop at Jack Owens and Tom Gilmore as an example as to why, you know, why the form was so poor. And it's like, well, they're not in the team now. And I think I've seen a comment, if Jack Owens and Tom Gilmore played on Sunday, Widnes probably win the game. So I think it's a combination of things. And I think, you know, maybe you'd have to say that maybe the issue is witness. You know, maybe that's the issue, that there's just an unshakable sort of, there's an unshakable sort of, not culture, culture is probably the wrong word, but there's something there in the background that feels like it's holding it back. Another thing, actually, I've just remembered this because I read it on Sunday and it really annoyed me. I seen someone commenting saying, it's something along the lines of, I can't believe Widnes have gone from the glory days to this sort of thing, you know, losing against 11 men. And I'm like, for God's sake.
It's hard to believe. I mean, it's been best part 40 years since that.
Well, that's what I mean. And it's like, it was 35 years ago that Widnes were any good, right? So the relevance of them glory days to now, and don't get me wrong, I'm a big believer that heritage and stuff's important, but to see people commenting stuff like that on the Facebook page about like today's team, it's just like, it's so, I find it so tiresome reading it. And I just think, I think it's just, It's funny actually because I seen a Featherstone fan comment on the story about Widnes's IMG, basically saying someone was saying, "Oh, it's, you know, they called them sleeping giants or something." And I seen someone saying, "Oh, it's a shame to see Widnes here. When I started watching in the '80s and nineties, they were like a big team." And then this Featherstone fan commented saying, "Oh, when you mean when they spent money on all the rugby union players they didn't have and then went bust." And when I suppose that was ultimately what happened in the end. But if other clubs did that now, you'd have Widnes fans criticise the sort of Widnes fans they'd criticise
in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's one in a nutshell, and sporting supporters all out to get at each other's, but very hypocritical at the same time.
Yeah. I was like, how have we gone from the glory days to this? As if the glory days were like last year. It was like, it's been 35 years. It's been paid. You know, it's not a case of it's just switched off and all of a sudden Widnes were good and then now they're in this situation. They've been in this situation now for the majority of the last 30 years. I don't know what you think, what the issue is, Mike.
I think, look, ultimately, without, I suppose, sitting on the fence with it, I think it's a bit of everybody, isn't it? You know, I think, starting with the playing group on Sunday, for example, I think Huntsler, who are bottom of the table, should be beating a team with 11 players on the field. So I think the players have to take responsibility for that, as does Alan Coleman, of course. He sets the team up. He picks his team selection. And obviously, we spoke about the prop situation. You know, Martin Riley and Liam Kirk have been let go. Fair enough. I'm not saying I'd want them both here next year because I probably wouldn't. But you've got to look in terms of who we've brought in and the balance of the team. But then the board side of things where you go back to, you know, for me, against Doncaster on Sunday, you know, that was a big, big game. And people may laugh at me saying playing Doncaster isn't a big game, but for where we are as a club and where we wanted to be or want to be in the playoffs, it was a massive game. And for me, there wasn't enough social media drive, even little things that don't cost too much to ramp it up when the performance went in. And then the bridge week was, well, it was... to say it lacked atmosphere, it was an understatement. And like you say, great by Andy Orobin doing business club, but things like that should have been done before, you know, on goals. And the board, in my opinion as well, like all these coaches that have left, we've only made the playoffs once, and that was with Alan Coleman, and that is why I'm massively behind Alan, and I think he deserves a fair crack of a 3-year process and see where we're at then, because he did achieve that and nobody else has done that. And, you know, in sport, a couple of games can go by and you forget the good someone can do. So I'm not having Alan Coleman should lose his job, not having that whatsoever. But going back to my point I'm about to make is the board members that have been there since we've been in the championship, they've got to look at themselves and think, well, apart from one season, we've finished in the playoffs. They've been there running the club and they know better than anybody. And don't get me wrong, I'm really grateful for them people stepping in. Well, and if they haven't, we don't know where else we would be. But at the same time, if you're concentrating on performance, they're the people who have been there throughout and seen the journey throughout and gone through different head coaches, different CEOs, and yet we've only made one playoff appearance to date.
Well, I think the other thing is that, yeah, okay, you put money in. A director's put money in. Let's say it was 25 grand. They put 25 grand in 6-7 years ago or whenever it was. But as a director, you've still got to be, you've still got to contribute. Whether, you know, not everyone's got money to keep sinking money in, but ultimately, like we say, we said 20, whatever, don't know the guy, met him briefly, Oldham. He's put money in and then he's come and he's contributed more because of what he's done. He's then, yeah, okay, he's not put 60 grand of his own personal money in, but he's generated. And we've had the conversation about Vicky on Twitter quite a few times, shutting down Vicky, the current board of directors made the decision to shut down Vicky, and that actually lost the club money. And so that's another question. That's the main issue. Well, not the main issue, but that's another thing. Is it's like, well, you've still got to. It's not. You can't just be like, right, well, I put in 25 grand here or did this there, so forever I'll just be a director and not contribute anything else, or just be there and around for when you want to be. And I think it's difficult because it. The way modern sport is, it's not like in the old days where they had committee, you know, they'd have a committee and it was like everyone does a little bit and then reports into the committee and all that. You can't run it like that anymore. All the Super League clubs are owned by one man at the top who calls the shots, basically. You're never going to be at a point where, because it's wasting time having meetings and board meetings and discussion about this. You need to actually do stuff. You need to action stuff. Lee, for instance, have done well because, Derek Bowman's got a lot of money, but he's actually gone and done stuff. He's made it happen. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's what I always feel Witness are a bit lacking. It's almost like they're just looking after it, but it's like, well, you've got to make it happen. No one's going to knock on your door and be like, right, here, our witness, we're going to give it you on a plate. Here it is. And like I said, the reason why the business club for me is an obvious thing is because it's a massive difference to anything we've seen straight away. You've seen the impact of someone coming in, doing stuff that's clearly generating revenue.
The thing is it's action rather than a load of words. You want to see things being someone doing it, and you know, Andy Orobin, absolutely, I tip my hat off to him because he's certainly doing that.
I was going to say about, I'm no fan of Chris Hamilton, particularly. I thought it was a strange appointment. He's not got another job in rugby league afterwards, but. Is his absence highlighting issues Widnes have in terms of he was there, he helped recruit the team or at least supported Alan in recruiting the team for last season. He obviously went largely as a result of the IMG score. How much of an impact does not having... and I know they're recruiting for a general manager at the moment, but how much of an impact has not having someone with that experience maybe of dealing with players and dealing with agents and stuff, how much has that had? Or do you think that's a convenient excuse given the players that we've actually had?
I think personally, maybe just my opinion, the club might be realising the absence of somebody in that role because obviously the general manager role has been advertised and you'd think that they'd be taking bits and pieces of that role up in theirs. So it'd be interesting to see who we recruit for that and, you know, the calibre of the person within sport, whether it's rugby league or elsewhere or where they come from. That'll be interesting to see. But I think with Chris, look, collectively with the board, the IMG score, it wasn't good enough. But I think if you ask Alan, he quite... like having Chris there. And I think one thing Chris did at the club was, whether people liked it or not, or his approach, he made difficult decisions and he got rid of players, whether we agree or disagree. And we made the playoffs last year. And that comes hand in hand with the board. Obviously, Chris, who was taking that role, and Alan. And as much as the IMG was a disaster, we didn't make the playoffs, and you move the clock forward to now and you think, I go back to the preparation for this year and where we was at the Batley game and we've never quite caught up with that. I do think having someone in that role, you know, matters for organisation, for taking pressure off Alan, because for me, even at a part-time level, you want to be making the head coach's job as easy as possible. Go and coach your team. These are the players I want, X, Y, and Z, and someone can be trusted to do negotiations, come back, right, okay, brilliant. I've got this, I've got that, I've not got this, I've not got that. Whereas I get the impression at the moment that's not quite the case and it's a bit helter-skelter. And I think that adds to kind of the situation that we've ended up being in, where it's a revolving door and there's no structure and the world changes every single week. So I do think it makes a difference. And look, you've got to source that money from somewhere to pay someone to do that role. But facts are facts. And we made the playoffs with someone in that role. So if you rehire somebody else, you maintain and improve your IMG score and they can do similar helping the playing squad. That might be the missing piece that kicks you back up the table, perhaps.
I mean, two points for me is one is the issue that the role's becoming a scapegoat role to protect, you know, the board can't sack themselves ultimately, but
exactly.
They can sack the CEO or the GM or the head of operations or whatever they want to call it. We've been through a few. Phil Finney was obviously there. Chris Hamilton, the latest one. Is the issue that they're trying to find, like for me, I thought Chris Hamilton might be fine on the rugby side with players and agents, whatever. But in terms of the other side, I thought he was poor. Now, is it a case of the role is too... Are they trying to get too broad of a thing? You either want someone who's going to run the back office or you want someone... Because what we're talking about all is almost a director of rugby type role. And that person isn't necessarily the same person who's going to decide is going to, that same person isn't necessarily going to be the best person to be having meetings with the council about the stadium or talking about commercial opportunities with people or whatever. And I just sometimes wonder whether that's an issue. But for me, the solution to me to what you were saying about the coach is ultimately he only has contact with the players Tuesdays, Thursdays, and captain's run. So maybe it's a case if you need not quite a full time coach, but you just give the coach a bit more time to then spend the time on them extra bits that you were talking about, like the recruitment side that he can do. You know what I mean? He almost has his coaching time, and then he has his
Potentially, mate. And look, you look through the teams above us. If you take Crest around one or two teams, a lot of them do have full-time coaches, and it probably does help them for the reasons that you've just said there. I think the problem where that probably come into the conversation with Alan is how much he earns from Widnes and how much he earns from his day job. And if we was to make him full-time, would the wage stack up to that? That might be a case of if you decide to go down them lines, you might have to go for someone else. I don't know at all Alan's circumstances, but it's a potential to do Barrow, it that way.
Barrow, as an example, they have a director of rugby and his job is effectively, he's probably the man between the coach and the board. He'll manage the players, he'll speak to the players and whatever. And he does the recruitment. He's always involved in anything player related. You like look at Doncaster, for instance, Carl Hall's the main man there, so he'll no doubt be involved in the player thing. And I think that's the problem, is it doesn't strike me that any of the board at Widnes are necessarily involved in that sort of thing. And maybe
connections as well, isn't it? And that comes with all the time. And if you're going to make connections, you've got to jump into it and go out and make them.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's where there's a deficiency. How you would get that? You'd like to think that now, if you've been there for 6-7 years, well, surely someone should have been thinking, well, maybe we should start building relationships with other clubs and building relationships with agents ourselves, so that we can start doing this. Because you know, it's not there's no like manual for it. There's no secret. You just got to speak to players and find a way of speaking to players and then offer them a deal. You know, it sounds straightforward, but actually it's not. And again, it goes back to that thing where it's like, no one's just going to knock on your door and say, right, this is the perfect way to do it. Or no one's going to turn up and say, this is how you should run things, because it's just not going to happen. And I think the problem, the danger that you have is someone might look at that general manager role and think, well, I think I could make a difference, or I like the idea of making a difference. But if the general manager is still under the board and the board is still calling the shots, then whoever comes in that general manager role isn't going to be able to make an impact that they want. And I think that's the concern.
It will be interesting, like you say, that general manager role, who it will be filled by, in terms of, will it be more rugby league knowledge connections based, or is it going to be more for the back office type thing? And, you know, I think you're either going to get someone who isn't recognised in rugby league circles, or you're going to get someone who is and is quite well known, but you maybe think, have they got the back office knowledge? I think you're going to get one type of person or the other, and I'll be very interested to see which way that goes.
Yeah. Before we finish off, we've been going an hour or so. What else have we got?
One more, another bit of a difficult question to ask, because it is hypothetical. But someone asked me, how low down in the table do you think we would have to be if Widnes was to pull the trigger on Alan Coleman?
I don't see Widnes finishing any lower than ninth, to be honest. Is it really about that? Does it make a difference if Widnes finish low down the table? Does it really matter if Widnes finish 7th or 12th? Do you know what I mean? He's still not making the playoffs, is a failure wherever you finish. And I think the one thing as well with the coach is, like, who are you bringing in?
Well, that's the other side of things that people don't think of, because as soon as a coach loses the job, we've been there time and time again, where you'll get people saying Steve McNamara, you'll get people saying assistant coaches from Super League, but unfortunately, they're not the types of people who are coming for a championship job unless you've got a bit of dough behind you. It's as simple as that.
And that's
you'll be looking at your Paul Woods at Swinton again, and people who are wanting to take a step up that way.
You know, you look at, well, Carl Forster's an example at North Wales, but he might look at it and think, well, actually, I feel like North Wales has got, if they've got a bit of cash, they might have more potential than Widnes. But I'm almost loath to say this, because I think the way that the game runs really poor, but because of the way rugby league's run at the moment, where you finish in the table doesn't bloody matter anyway.
It doesn't. I suppose it does as a fan, though, if you're paying and you want to be entertained and stuff like that, doesn't it?
It does. But then the question then becomes, how many home games do you lose before he gets the sack? That's really the question that people are asking, because it doesn't actually matter where you finish in the table.
No, it does. I get it in terms of where rugby league is, but I suppose, as much as possible, don't they?
If Widnes won 10 out of all, 10 home games, right? If Widnes won 10, say Widnes win 10 out of 12 home games and don't make the playoffs, right? But they only win, I don't know, 3 or 4 at home and win loads away and make the playoffs, is that a better season?
Well, no, I think going back to the question, I think we're going a bit off topic here. I think the person who's asked it, I think they're more meaning as a general season, you know what I mean? For what it's worth, I won't sack Alan at all. Alan is the last person I'd be getting rid of. Absolutely the last person.
And that's my answer. The other thing is timing is a massive issue now, because it's so difficult. Because if you wait till the end of the season and then you sack him, well, they've already recruited the whole team for next season anyway. So you've then sacked the coach who's recruited the full team. Do you know what I mean? And we've seen it in Super League, haven't we, where when Warrington appointed Powell, they were basically naff for a year because his excuse was, well, it's not my team, I need to build my own team. Well, you're not going to, you can't get away with that in a championship. It's not going to wash. So, I don't actually think sacking your coach actually is you're on a hiding to nothing anyway. And that's why I think it was a good move to give Alan a contract extension. Yeah. And I see people moaning about that on Facebook, but it's a complete lack of understanding where they're talking to players and the players want to know who the coach is, because if they don't know who the coach is, well, that changes the mind as to whether they're going to sign.
That's it. And look, let's have it right. Let's strip it back just a little bit and stuff. Like, there's sport and everybody's guilty of it at times. It's very short-sighted and, you know, let's have it right. This guy has rocked up from Swinton. A lot of people questioned him at the beginning, and he rocked up and he delivered a fifth place finish, you know, something that nobody's achieved straight away, you know, this side of Super League. And I'm not saying that should have been the case, because it certainly shouldn't, but nevertheless, he did that. And, you know, I think in sport, certainly football's an example where people pull the trigger far too quickly. It's ridiculous. And, you know, a club like Widnes, when you don't have a lot of cash to spend, you need a blueprint and you need a pathway. And you look at Cresta at Barrow, he's been there years and they've had the down times, but they come back up again. And, you know, Mark Aston, obviously what's going on at Sheffield now is a different story, but he was there year on year building. And Alan's got a massive part to play in the pathway. He is the lead driving force in bringing the youth development back. Now, a lot of people across the town have criticised the club for this over numerous years, and rightly so in certain points. And he's the guy who is saying, we need this, we want this, and he's implementing it and doing free extras for the kids that are coming into the club. And that takes time, and you've got to show loyalty to someone who's willing to do that. You've got to let them grow the club and see where you are in 3 years' time. If we're sat here at the end of next season, we haven't progressed on the field, then you maybe sit back and you maybe ask the question then. But for now, you know, we started this journey and we're on a bit of a dip at the moment, but that's sport. So for me, you've got to keep going, and you've got to see, like you say, there's a lot of two-year deals coming up. Have trust that some of these two-year deals are not going to be one-year, 18-month, six-year deals. See where this youth pathway is taking us and see how we kick on next year. But I think Alan is the last person that should be copying it, to be honest. I might get criticised for that because people aren't happy with the performances. And right, I get that to a point. But for me, it's a far bigger picture than that, especially when you're running on a budget that isn't the biggest.
I think if Widnes finished ninth this season and next season we're in exactly the same position, I think you're probably at the point there where you question it. If we're 12 months on and Widnes are in the same place now, because I think you're going to have to pull. But again, I still don't think there's a good time to sack your coach because of this ridiculous player situation that you have. But, like, I agree with what you said. I think, ultimately, we're writing off the season now, and I know people will say it's very unlikely, but there's no reason why Widnes couldn't go on a run and win 5 or 6 out of the last 8 games, whatever there is left, and sneak into top 6 or at worst get somewhere near to it.
The frustrating thing, mate, is, you know, we're capable, and like, as much as I couldn't repeat my prediction of the Toulouse game, look what we did against Toulouse. No, they wasn't impressive on the night, but we was, and we know we've got them performances in us. And like you say, I mean, hypothetically, if it did, it's still on, isn't it? And of course, other teams as well could drop points along the way and end up being in a worse situation than us. You just don't know, do you? And it's a cliche, isn't it? But this championship, it is. It's nuts, isn't it? And it's full of twists and turns.
It's still in Widnes' hands to a point. And that's what we're clinging to now. Right, enjoy the game at the weekend, and we will see you next week.